Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Tet Vav Amud Aleph. Yesterday we left off with the position that was brought by Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, that Dvar Torah, Ha'av Yoreshet Bino, Bishai Reshet Bina. The Chiddush, obviously, then what he's saying is that a woman inherits her child, whether it's her daughter or whether it's her son. The fact that the woman can inherit them, that's the Chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And the obvious question derives from our Mishnah, and that's what the question that begins Kuf Tet Vav Amud Aleph is, Eitavei Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Yochanan challenges this memra of Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Shimon, Aisha et bina, Aisha et ba'ala, v'achei ha'em, manchilim v'lo nochlim. They bequeath inheritance, but they do not inherit. So one of the examples from our Mishnah is Isha et bina, a woman vis-a-vis her son, only bequeaths to him, but does not inherit from him. Now, as the Rashbam points out, even though you could have asked the question from the ratio of the Mishnah, meaning the cases right before, just say the from the opposite perspective, the Gemara chose to bring it from this part of the Mishnah because it says Aisha bina explicitly. And since it mentions it explicitly, it's very easy to see from this the question that the Gemara is asking. There the Mishnah makes it clear that they bequeath, but do not inherit, and that means that a woman does not inherit her son. So how is Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Shimon going to deal with this? Amarlei, so he responded to him, Mishnatenu eni yodea mishana. I do not know who the author of our Mishnah is. So the way the Rabbeinu Gershom reads this is very simply, D'lo yadinan tena'ei desfira leikavatei. I don't know any Tana that supports the position of our Mishnah. Or in essence, what he's saying is, what the Gemara says in other places, Yechidoi. Our Mishnah is a opinion of a single individual. It is not the accepted halacha with regards to this matter. It's one tana or one odd limud that the Mishnah has, and nobody else agrees to it. That's the way the Rebbeinu Gershom learns it. The Rashbam, on the other hand, says the Mishnah has an internal problem in it, which will come out as we move through the sugya here, in terms of a consistency in the drasha. The limud for Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Shimon derives from the fact that there is a hekesh between Mate Av and Mate Aim. And so what he's going to show is that the drasha comes with other things with it. And our Mishnah only takes a portion of the drasha and not the whole drasha. Therefore, there's an internal problem in the Mishnah as to how it learns this limud. So that's the way the Rashbam learns it. We're postponing it a little bit to the next section of the Gemara, but it'll become clear that there's an internal steer, and that's what he's pointing out. V'lei malei Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKatzavi. Why don't we say that the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKatzav? D'lo darish matot. Because he's not doresh the word matot. Gemara says, lo mitokma matzniten k'Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKatzav. Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKatzav cannot be the author of the Mishnah, even though he's not doresh matot. So then that would say that the hekesh of matot, the matea av and matea aim, doesn't exist. And therefore he won't have the same limud, or he can't have the limud that Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Shimon has, and he could be the author of our Mishnah. The Gemara says he cannot be the author of the Mishnah because the Ktani ubnei achot, because it says in our Mishnah that the sons of the sister, meaning the nephews, take precedence. Just interesting to note that the Rashbam himself has no terminology for nephew. Today in the modern Hebrew, a nephew is an achyan, or a niece is an achyanit, but there is no word that he has in Hebrew. And therefore, a number of times back on Kuf Yudaud Amud Bet, and Kuf Chet Amud Aleph, Kuf Tet Amud Aleph, the Rashbam calls nephews nechdam, their grandson or their grandchild. Just something to keep in mind in terms of the language of the Rashbam. Vitano. So this is an interesting issue here, that Tano is a bright or a tosefta that is brought on the Mishnah. It's not something that's explicitly written in the Mishnah. But over here, the Rashbam points out, v'habraita einu mosefet ala Mishnah ela mefereshati. This tosefta, this braita, is not coming to add on additional information to the Mishnah, but rather it's giving the interpretation of the Mishnah. It's explicating on the Mishnah. And in doing so, says the following, b'nei achot v'lo b'not achot, that there is precedence given to the nephews over the nieces. So if you have an individual, Reuven and Dinah, who are brother and sister, Reuven who passes away without any offspring, and without his father being alive, then it would pass to his sister Dina. Dina's not alive, it passes to her children. If she has both sons and daughters, the way that our Mishnah reads, because it says in our Mishnah, Bnei Achot, instead of saying Ben Ubat Achot, which means that the Banim get it and not the Banot. Or in essence, we give precedence to the male offspring over the female offspring, even when we're dealing with nephews and nieces. The Braita here gives that definition to our Mishnah and says, V'arminan l'may hilchoto. Why does the Mishnah specify Bnei Achot and not Benot Achot? From Rav Sheshit l'kadein. That's what we learned back on Kuf Yud Gimel. That's to give precedence to the male over the female. V'isa kadatcho matnita and Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzavi. If you think Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzavi is the author of our Mishnah, ha'amar echad ben v'echad bat shavim b'nichsei ha'em. That when it comes to the mother's Yerusha, that there is no difference between the male and female offspring. So here they're inheriting their mother, because the Yerusha is coming through their uncle. The uncle passes away and it moves to his sister, who is their mother. Over there, Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav says that male and female are equal at that point. Once it comes through a female offspring, then sons and daughters are equal. If it went through a male offspring, that may not be the case. But since it went through a female offspring or through the mother, then male and female, no differentiation. So therefore, Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav can definitely not be the author of our Mishnah. So now the Gemara attempted to find an author for our Mishnah. First of all, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, that was the whole point of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, is I don't know who the author of this Mishnah is. The Gemara says, or proposed, that it should be Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav. The Gemara says it can't be Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav, because our Mishnah differentiates between male offspring and female offspring when it passes through a female inheritor. And Rabbi Zechariah ben Katzav blurs those lines and says there's no difference between a ben and a bat when they're inheriting their mother. So that he obviously cannot be the author of the Mishnah, so we fail to find an author according to Rabbeinu Gershom. Or now we're going to see for the Rashbam what the problem is. V'tana didan mimanavshach. Here we're going to discuss, according to the Rashbam, what was the major issue for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon with our Mishnah, which is V'tana didan mimanavshach. The Tana of our Mishnah, how does he deal with this situation? Idarish matot, if he is doresh matot, which means that there's mateav, mateaim, isha, namiti, rashid, binah, then similar to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, he should have the drasha that the matot tells us av ve'aim, and there's this bidirectional relationship, which says that the children inherit from the mother and the father, and they also pass Yerusha to the mother and father. Ilo darish matot. Then if he doesn't doresh the word matot, then ben kodem lebat benichseim minaleh. Then how does he know that when it comes to the mother's possessions, that the son takes precedence over the daughter? So the drusha of matot involves two aspects to it. One aspect is that of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, which is that matot is in plural, mateav, umatayim, which means that it's from both sides. And just like the bat is your reshet from the mother and the father, so too the mother and the father are your resh from the daughter. So that's one. Number two is, how do you know of precedence? The word matot teaches us also for the hekesh of the matea aim to the matea av to teach you, just like by the matea av, we know that the male goes before the female, so too by the matea aim, the male goes through before the female. So those are two drashot that derive from matot. Our Mishnah only takes one of the two drashot. It takes the one drasha, which is that matea av and matea aim are mukash. There is a hekesh to say that males go before females, but he rejects the hekesh of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. How do you do that? If you're ready to raise the hekesh is either fully engaged or you don't engage it at all. And this, according to the Rashbam, is the reason Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon rejects our Mishnah, is because he's inconsistent in his drasha of matot. So my answer is, the olam darish matot. He is doresh matot. Vishaini hacha, and over here it's different, amakra, the pasuk says, B'chol bat yoreshet nachala, yoreshet ve'ena moreshet. So over here, there are two versions or ways to look at this. The Rashbam says, Pasuf starts, B'chol bat, Yoreshet nachala mimatot bnei Yisrael. Any daughter who inherits nachala mimatot bnei Yisrael from the matot bnei Yisrael. The matot is the hekesh between av ve'im. According to the Rashbam, the pasuk could have just read b'chol bat nachala. You don't need the word yoreshet. Any daughter who comes into a nachala mimatot bnei Yisrael doesn't need to be yoreshet. The additional word of yoreshet teaches you yoreshet velo moreshet. She inherits, but she does not bequeath. So what the pasuk is telling you is that a daughter inherits mimatot from two different matot, from the matea av and from the matea aim. A daughter can inherit from both parents. On the other hand, moreshet, she does not bequeath her inheritance or her possessions to matot, to the matea av and to the matea aim, to two matot, rather only to one matea, and that's matea av. So in essence, it's a one-way street. She is yoreshet from mother and father, but she's only moreshet to her father and not to her mother. And that's how the author of our Mishnah comes to the conclusion that even though we have a drusha of matot to be mekish between the matea av and matea aim, to tell you just like by the matea av, males go before females, so too by matea aim, males go before females. Nevertheless, that hekesh does not extend to the limud of Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Shimon, to tell us that also that by matea aim, she will inherit her children just like the matea av inherits his children, because we have a specific miut in the pasuk that says yoreshet and not moreshet. The Rashbam then quotes from the Rabbeinu Chananel, who says it derives not from the word yoreshet, but rather from the mem that heads mimatot. So mimatot is a qualifier. Mimatot. Mimsat shnei matot hi diyoreshet. Only a portion of the matot inherit. And the portion of the matot that inherit is the mateav. The mateaim does not inherit. She does not get the possessions of her son or her daughter in that situation, which means that not always do we say that matea av and matea aim are equal. Mimatot, there's sometimes where it's equal, sometimes where it's not equal. It is equal from the perspective that males take precedence over females. On the other hand, mimatot, the hekesh is not in force when it comes to the fact that the mother will inherit the child. It will only be the father that inherits the child, and that will be a distinction between them. And from that, we have the source of the explanation of the author of our Mishnah. And then for the Rishbam, that's the answer to the question about Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon saying, are the Mishnah, I don't know who wrote it. I don't understand how we could have a drasha. Here the Gemara explains the drasha associated with the author of our Mishnah. And therefore, again, we reject Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon's drasha, or his view that the mother inherits the children, and we follow the perspective of our Mishnah, which is Aisha Bina. When it comes to a mother and a child, the child inherits, but it does not bequeath to the mother. All right, now we move on to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah here lays out what's called Seder Nachalot. How does it work in terms of the hierarchy of the inheritors? Kahu, this is the way it works. Ish ki yamut ubein ein lo. If a person passes away and does not have a son, v'avartem et nachlato libito, then you move over the nachla to his daughter. The primary inheritor is the son. Secondarily, if there are no sons, then it goes to the daughter or daughters. Ben kodem lebat. The son takes precedence over the daughter, which is obvious from the psukim. Kol yotzei yirecho shel ben kodmim lebat. So this is the important line in the Mishnah, which is all derivatives of the son take precedence over the daughter. So in an instance where the grandson is alive, then that grandson will take precedence over the daughter or his aunt. So in a case where you have Reuven and Dina, and Reuven has a child, and Yaakov passes away, when Yaakov passes away and Reuven's not alive, technically, the next in line, in terms of kinship, should be the daughter. She's the closest blood relative at this point to Yaakov, because she is his daughter. Nevertheless, Reuven's son, or Yaakov's grandson, will take precedence. Because in essence, he steps into the shoes of his father, he replaces his father. And since his father would take precedence over his sister, Reuven would take precedence over Dinah, so too the children of Reuven will take precedence over Dinah, and that goes all the way down. If there's any inheritor of Reuven, any Yotzei Yerecho that exists from him, that would also be the same din, which is that they take precedence over the Bat. So the Chiddush of the Mishnah here is that it's not the closest relative, but rather you look at the hierarchy based on whatever is laid out in the Torah. Then for that individual, they take precedence no matter how close or far away any derivative of them is. Bat kodemet achin. The daughter goes before the brothers. V'yotzei yirecha shel bat kodmim achin. Similarly over here, any descendant of the daughter will take precedence over the brothers of the deceased. Now over here you have a skip like you do in the psukim, where the next inheritor over here would be the father. That's mentioned at the end of the Mishnah. We'll see that in a second. The children always take precedence, so that means son, daughter first, then father. If there is no father, then it goes to the brothers of the deceased. Achin kodmim lacheav. Once again here, we say that the brothers take precedence over the uncles. Yotzei yireichan shel achin kodmim lacheav. Similarly, any descendant of the brothers will take precedence over the uncles. Again here, we skipped a step, which is the grandfather. The grandfather would go first before the uncles, because anybody who derives from a single individual, that individual takes precedence. Zaklau, here's the principle. Kola kodim inachala, yotzei yirecho kodmin. Anybody who is first in line in the hierarchy of inheritance, any derivative of that individual takes precedence over the next stage of Yerusha. Va'av kodem nechol yotzei yirecho. And the father always goes before any of his offspring, with the exception of the children. In that here, in the case of Yaakov, Reuven, and then Reuven's children, Reuven's children will always take precedence. That's the Ben and the Bat. But with the absence of the Ben and the Bat, then it goes next to the father, which would be Yaakov. If there's no Yaakov, then it goes to the brothers of Reuven, or the sisters of Reuven. If there are no brothers and sisters to Reuven, then we move up to the next level, which would have been, according to the Torah, moves from the brothers to the uncles. What the Mishnah is saying is that we don't first go to the uncles, we first go to the grandfather. Goes back to Yitzchak first, because Ha'av, the father, goes before any of his descendants. And therefore the father, meaning the grandfather over here, would take precedence over the uncles. So Tanur Rabbanan, Ben, Ein Li Ella Ben. When it comes to a child, it says the first inheritor, the first in line, is the son. I don't have in the Torah anything besides the word ben. Ben a ben. How do I know that the grandson? O bata ben. The granddaughter? O ben bata ben. Or the great-grandson, which is the son of the daughter of the son. Minayin. How do I know that they take precedence along with the ben? So that they would go before anyone else. The son is first in line. His children will be first in line. And his grandchildren will be first in line. Tamad Omar, ein lo. When the pasuk says, v'chi yamotu bein ein lo, ayein alav. You have to look into it. You have to look into the matter. The drusha, according to the Rashbam, is the fact that the letter yud is in there. You didn't need the yud in the word ein. You could have had it be an lo, that he doesn't have. And the Rashbam makes an example of that by Bilam. It says, Ma'ain Bilam. The Bilam refused. You can see that Ain can be written without a Yud. Here where you have it with a Yud, you can be Doresh, that extra Yud, and opens up the possibility of being Doresh, the word is not being Ain Lo, but rather Ayin Lo. Look into it. See if there are any derivatives of this individual. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom notes it over here, Klomar, Mihai Aleph, De'Ain Lo, Ase Ayin. If I switch the aleph for an ayin, klomar ayin alav mikod stadim abayim mikoach kocho. Look into anything that is a derivative of him, anything that derives from him. And similar is true for anybody who has precedence in the hierarchy. You have to look into their descendants or anything that derives from them. Or you could have written the pasuk without ever saying ein lo. You could have just said chiyamot v'lo ayalo ben. Something along those lines, you don't need to use the word ain at all. So the others learn it from that. Either way, no matter how you get there, whether you switch out the aleph or the ayin, which even according to Rashbam, seemingly you would have to do as well, or it derives from the yud being in there, rather than it writing it without a yud. Some suggest that you didn't even need the word ein lo at all. And no matter which way you get the drasha, the Gemara says now ayin alav, similar to what we have by the din of Yibum. But Yibum also, they make such a drasha, ayin alav, to see if he has any offspring. Any offspring is poter you from Yibum. So too, any offspring over here will be deemed to be similar to a child. For instance, by the case of Yibum, the child obviates the necessity for Yibum. So too, any derivative of that child also obviates the need for Yibum, because we say ayin alav. Similar over here in a positive formulation, the inheritor, if he doesn't exist, ayin alav. See if he has any descendants, because his descendants will step into his shoes, be the equivalent of him, and therefore inherit on his behalf, even though they're further away as relatives from the deceased. And just like by Yibum, they're deemed to be like a child or like children. So to over here, they're going to be deemed to be as if the child or the direct descendant of this individual, and therefore they will take precedence, for instance here, over the daughter, because they are derivative of the son. Ainli ala bat, I only have a daughter. Bat abat, the granddaughter. Uben abat, or the grandson. Ubat ben abat, or the great-grandchild, the great-granddaughter, who is a daughter of the son of the daughter, minayin. Tamalomar, ein lo, ayin alav. So in each of these cases, the ein lo comes to teach us that you have to look not only at the individual themselves, but anyone who derives from that individual. Because the pasuk says, ish ki amut ubein ein lo, vavarte menachalato lebito, vim ein lo bat. If he doesn't have a daughter, again, we're going to be derashed the same thing. And so on and so forth, for every next line in the hierarchy, it says ein lo, each one of them is ayin alav. Look to make sure that not only do they not exist, but no derivative of them exists. Because if there is any derivative of them, then they will take precedence over the next in line in terms of the hierarchy. The Rashbam points out that the reason that the Gemara over here, the Bright over here, brings an example of a grandson, a granddaughter, and then when it comes to the great-grandchild, when it derives from the son, it talks about a great-grandson. When it derives from the daughter, it says a great-granddaughter. He says, but the same would be true by a great-grandson or a great-granddaughter. Why does the Bright only bring one example? So the Rashbam answers, Lashon Klilahu. It's easier to read it or to say it. When you speak about a grandson, then you would talk about Ben Aben or Bata Ben. That's easy to say. If you're talking about a great-grandchild, then you say Ben Bata Ben. It's the great-grandchild who's the son of the daughter of the child. But if you were to say it, that it was coming at Ben HaBen HaBen, or Bata Bata Ben, that would be much harder to say if you have the same in a row. So all the Braita does is alternate the generations between male and female to make it easier to say. So in the case of a son, it calls it a great-grandson, because then you go Ben Bat Ben. And by the case of a daughter, it calls it a great-granddaughter, and not a great-grandson, because then it'll be Bat Ben Abat. Not to say that the other way would not be true, it's just done for ease of reading, which is these are Lishna Klila, these are lighter languages that you can read through quickly, instead of having a tongue twister that's very hard to say. The examples are used for ease of pronunciation and not for any halachic ramification. In addition, the Rishbam says something interesting over here in terms of the descendants being a derivative of their parents. He says, Kevan de'ika yotzei yirecha, as long as this woman has some descendant, or the son has some descendant, ubar yirech imohu. A fetus is considered to be an extension of the individual. It's a funny explanation, because you could distinguish between an ubar, a fetus, which is part and parcel of the woman, it's inside the woman, and you would claim that ubar yerech imo is an extension of his mother, it's a limb of his mother, because he's inside of his mother. Once the child is born, you wouldn't necessarily apply the principle of ubar yerech imo. But we did see some concept like this earlier, which is the idea that yotzei yerecho, the descendant of an individual, is as if they are the individual. They step into the shoes of the individual. And I think that might be what the Rashbam is hinting to, not necessarily using the principle directly of Ubar Yerechimo, but the concept that a descendant can be the equivalent of the individual themselves. The Baal Yetzer Sefot over here discussed the problem of why do we need this Ayin Alav at all? Why don't we just say the bnei banim harehen kibanim. The grandchildren are like children. And so therefore, why do you need this whole drasha? There is already a concept that descendants are considered to be as if they are the individual themselves. So that means that grandchildren are the equivalent of children. Or the same would be true of great-grandchildren would be the same as grandchildren, as the same as a child. You could always bring it back to the equivalent of a child. So why do you need this drasha? So the Baal Yad Tosafot, first of all, distinguish between the word zera and the word ben. And they say the word zera includes multiple generations, or b'nei banim harim kibanim. The word zera implicitly implies that we're not just talking about a direct descendant, we're talking about zera, any descendant. And in that situation, we would invoke the principle of b'nei banim harim kibanim. Then when you use the term ben, it means a child. It does not mean b'nei banim harim kibanim, then you would have used the word zera. But the fact that we use the word ben over here limits it to a ben and not to b'nei banim. Then the Baal Yad Tosafot asked with regards to a mamzer. We know that, for instance, by ibum, we need to include a mamzer to be a zera, to be an offspring that is poter from ibum. And there we have a riboy for it. So he says over here, where is the riboy for that? Here the Baal Yad Tosafot again say that there's a difference between the word ben and zera. That the word zera implies zera kasher. Implies that it's a kosher offspring, not simply any offspring, and that's where you'll need a limud. On the other hand, when it comes to ben, ben includes anybody. It's a son, irrespective of whether they are kasher or not kasher. And therefore, over here, you don't need necessarily a limud to include a mamzer, because that would derive from the fact that the Torah says ben. And ben would include zera kasher or zera pasul. Bnei banim harim kibanim is not included because you use the word ben. And that's why we need the limud of ayin alav to get down to the next generations. That's in a broad perspective how the Baal Yad Tosafot learns this. The Rosh Mishantz asks an interesting question from Yibum, which is by Yibum we know b'nei banim, arayen kibbanim, that they have the same status as a child, the grandchildren. And we also know that by Yibum, the grandchildren are poter mi Yibum, but the achim, the brothers, are not poter mi yibum. So if that's the case, why do you need me to tell you that grandchildren take precedence over the brothers of the deceased? By definition, in yibum, if the grandchildren take away the need for yibum, they should get precedence over the brothers. That's the lima we had earlier in the perek, that the reason a child takes precedence over the brother is because there's no yibum when there is a child. Similarly, if there's a grandchild, there is no yibum. So that should say that a grandchild takes precedence over the brothers. So the Rosh Mishantz wants to know, why do you need any limud at all? From yibum, you would know that grandchildren take precedence over the brothers of the deceased. So the Baal Yad Tosafot answer that there is an additional piece of information that we wouldn't know from yibum, which is that they are an equal level or playing field with the banim. Which is that, for instance, in the case of Bnot Tzlafchad. In the case of Bnot Tzlafchad, they're going to inherit their father, and they are on a level playing field with all of their uncles. Which means that the brothers of the deceased are now inheriting the father of the deceased, and the deceased's children, the Bnot Tzlafchad, are also inheriting their grandfather. And so that's the chiddush that we learn out from here, is that the grandchildren are on an equal footing with the brothers or the siblings of that individual, and that they can inherit on an 11 playing field. So that Tzlafchad's father, Hefer, when he passed away, passes Yerusha not only to his children, but also to Benot Tzlafchad, to his granddaughters, because they represent their father, Tzlafchad. And given that that's a chiddush that you would not know from Yibum, the only thing you would know from Yibum is that they take precedence over the brothers of the deceased. So in Tzlafchad's Yerusha, the daughters or the children would take precedence over the brothers. But you wouldn't know from Yibum is the fact that the granddaughters take inheritance, or the grandchildren would take inheritance on a level playing field from their grandfather along with their uncles. And so that's what the Rosh Mishantz says is the chiddush based on this Gemara. The Ri rejects it and says the whole reason that we learn by Yibum anything about grandchildren and so on and so forth all derives from Nachalah. And so therefore, it's just circular reasoning. You're asking, why don't we learn something from Yibum? The whole reason we know it by Yibum is because we learn it from Nachalah. And therefore, nachala is the paradigm by which you need to set it. And that's what's being learned over here, ayin alav, that you need to look into the generations. Now the Gemara continues, haketzat. How does this work? Nachala memashmeshet veolechet ad Ruvain. Nachala moves along all the way back to Ruvain. So now, this seemingly has nothing to do with what we were saying. Until now, we've been speaking about generations going down the lineage, which means that a son, grandson, great-grandson, and we're speaking about precedence of those over other parties. All of a sudden over here, it turns around and says, Haketzad, well, the Yerusha goes back all the way to Reuven. What does that have to do with this? So the way that the Rashbam connects them is, Klomar, Vadai, Kihechi, Darminan, Aina, Love, the Mato, Hachanami, Arminan, Aina, Love, the Malo. Just like we say, check out all descendants and all derivatives when you go down the lineage, when you're talking about a son or a grandson or a great-grandson, so too when you go up the lineage. If you go back to a father, a grandfather, a great-grandfather, in each one of those stages, you have to look at that individual and figure out if there are any descendants from that individual before you move up to the next level or next generation above. In both directions, that's both in descending, going down the tree, or up the tree, in either direction, this din of ayin alav applies, that you have to look at the individual and any derivative of that individual. If that individual has any derivative, then they will take precedence over moving to the next stage, whether it's down the lineage or up the lineage. Either way, you have to look into that, and they get precedence if they have any descendants before you move on to the next level. So now the Gemara asks, V'leima ad Yaakov, why do you say that it only goes back until Reuven and not to Yaakov? Yaakov is the ultimate inheritor because he's the first, quote-unquote, Jew that has children that are all part of Klal Yisrael. So if you get back to Yaakov, you must be related to some Jew in the world. There are no true Jews in the world that are not related through Yaakov because Yaakov is the beginning of any descendants of Jews. Now, obviously, if you have a ger or gioret, if you have converts, that would not be the case. Converts have their own rules with regards to that, and we know that because a ger's property, if he does not have descendants, then becomes hefker because he does not go back up the tree, he only goes down the tree. So it's only person who's possible in Klal Yisrael not to have any relatives is a ger or a gioret because they do not have an ability to go further up the family tree because it stops at them. They're the beginning of it. But for any Jew that is a Jew throughout the generations, ultimately, you have to be related through Yaakov Avinu. So Gemara wants to know, why did it say that you're only related through Reuven and not through Yaakov? Because Yaakov is the ultimate stop, not Reuven. So Amar Abaye Gemirei, we have a L'halocha L'moshe Mitzinai, or we have a Mesorah, that D'lo Kala Shifta, that no Shevet will ever be completely wiped out. The Rishbam brings a hint from the Pasuk in Malachi, it says, Ki ani Hashem lo shaniti, v'atem b'nei Yaakov lo chilitem. So he says, I am Hashem lo shaniti, I will never disappear, I never change. Just like Hashem is permanent, so too, atem b'nei Yaakov lo chilitem. You, the children of Yaakov, will never be wiped out. And they see in that a hint or a promise that the Shvatim will never be wiped out. So the furthest you have to go back is to one of the Shvatim, because there's a guarantee that there's at least somebody alive from the Shevet. Can't be that you're the last standing member of the Shevet, because then the Shevet would be wiped out. So there has to be some relative that you have through the Shevet. And as the Rabbeinu Ochanan points out, the reason the Gemara said Reuven and not any of the other Shvatim is not because there's any significance to Reuven, it's just he's the first of the Shvatim. It'd be true of any of the Shvatim. They just use Reuven as an example because he's the first Shevet. So over here in the Rashbam, Rashbam goes through an explanation of how you would get back to Reuven, or how you would have a situation like this. He takes the family tree of Reuven from the Torah, and using that, he then tries to explain what would be the order or hierarchy of inheritance, not going down, not going through the children, but rather going through the father and grandfather and great-grandfather. So we know in the Torah, Reuven is the father of Chanoch Upalu. Palu has Eliav as a child. Eliav has two children, Datan and Nimuel. And then here in this scenario, Nimuel has a son. That is the description that the Rashbam gives. And then Nimuel's son passes away. So now we look. The son of Nimuel doesn't have any children. There's no inheritance for the children. Next in line would be Nimuel, would be his father. If he has no father, next in line would be his siblings. He has no siblings. So now that he has no father and no siblings, it would go to the uncle, but as we pointed out in the Mishnah, that the uncle cannot inherit before his father. And that means Eliav, the grandfather, would take precedence over Datan, the uncle. In the Rashbam, it's not written this way, but if you look in the Agota Bach, it's clear that based on our Mishnah, that what is written in the Rashbam does not make sense, and it should be reversed, and that Eliav, the grandfather, should take precedence over his uncle, Datan. Now, in all these cases, when you look at his grandfather, Eliav, or you look at his uncle, Datan, you have to look at Datan. Does he have any children? Does he have any descendants? If there's no descendants there, it will move back up the line. So far, the child who passed away, who has no children, the first in line to inherit would be his father. If there's no father, it would be his brothers. No brothers, then it moves up to his uncles, but based on our Mishnah, you'd first go to the grandfather. So you look at Eliav. If Eliav is not alive and has no offspring, it goes to his uncle, Datan. If Datan has nobody, then it moves back up to his great-grandfather, Palu. And again, you have to look through Palu. Does he have any descendants? And there again, you'd move up to the next generation and look. Palu has a brother, Chanoch. But before Chanoch, you'd go to Reuven, his father. So that's how you get all the way back up to Reuven, which is that if you're looking through each generation, when you look at grandfathers, uncles, and so on and so forth, you would have to look and see if there are any derivatives, given the hierarchy that we know is the case. You could get all the way back up to Reuven in that case, and that's what the Gemara is saying. It'll never go beyond Reuven, back to Yaakov. All right, so now the Gemara brings, Amrav on Amrav, Kol Omer Tirash Bat, that the daughter inherits in Bata Ben, along with the granddaughter, Afilu Nasish B'Yisrael, in Shomim Lo. Even if it's a prince amongst Klal Yisrael, we do not listen to him. Sheneinam Ela Masei Tzdukim. Because this is the thesis or the way of the Tzdukim. So first of all, the Tzdukim, as the Rashbam over here brings from Avot to Rabbi Natan, that Sadok and Baitus were the Talmidim of Antigonus Ish Socho. And in Perkei Avot, Antigonus Ish Socho says, do not worship a Kodesh Baruch Hu in order to get the prize, to get reward. You do it without having the reward in mind or thinking that you're going to get rewarded from it. Sadok and Baitus could not fathom such a concept because it can't be possible that you do all of this and there's no reward and there's no Olam Haba, there's nothing. It's just you do it without any consideration for what you do. Can't be possible. And then they came to the conclusion, just like there's nothing in what Antigonus Ish Socho is saying here, so that there's nothing in all the things that the Rabbanan say. And therefore they rejected Torah Shebaal Peh, or they rejected the Limudim of the Chachamim, and they solely relied on Torah Shebichtav, and their interpretation of Torah Shebichtav. So I've mentioned a number of times in the past, it's impossible to read the Torah Shebichtav without Torah Shebaal Peh. That means that even if you don't believe that the Chachamim are right in their drasha, you still need some form of Mesorah because the Torah itself gives ambiguous terms or information that needs interpretation by definition. And so therefore, you have to have some sort of Mesorah, and that's an underlying failure in the concept of the Tzadok and Baitus, which is that they need a Torah Shebaal Peh. And to reject Torah Shebaal Peh, they have to replace it with their own Torah Shebaal Peh. And so that's some of the fallacy in the concept. Tzadok and Baitus, we find that they had a very strong following, especially during Bayit Sheni. The Mishnayot and Yedayim, as well as the Tosefta and Yedayim, speak about these types of battles, theological battles between the Pushim and the Tzdukim. You also have it in the Mishnayot and Yoma with regards to how the Torah was brought by the Kohen Gadol and Yom HaKippurim, Machlok between the Pushim and the Tzdukim. It was something that was a hot topic and a hot issue, meaning that the Tzdukim really had a tremendous seat of power in the Mikdash. Many of the Kohanim subscribed to the views of the Tzdukim, and many Kohanim Gedolim were Tzdukim. And that has influence over the people and the direction of Klal Yisrael. That tension existed, and it's also brought in Megillat Ta'anit, which is a list of holidays celebrated during Bayit Sheni. And a number of those holidays are for the times that the Pushim successfully overcame some sort of theological or halachic attack of the Tzdukim. And what we're speaking about here is one of those instances of a difference of opinion between the Pushim and the Tzdukim as to the hierarchy of inheritance. And so, what Rav Huna Amarav is saying is anybody who wants to establish this as being the rule, we will reject it, because the only reason they're doing that is because they're subscribing to the view of the Tzdukim. Rishonim go as far as to say that even if they're not a Tzduki, and they want to do it for whatever reason, we will reject it because it simulates the effect of what the Tzdukim want, even if it's right for that moment. And that's what the Baalei Tosafot say. Shuotzeh latakein lefi tzarech sha'ah. There's a need at that time, for whatever reason, there's a need to put in a gzeirah. We will reject that gzeirah because we find that the Tzdukim are doresh the way, and we don't want to give any support to their view of the Torah. We're afraid is that if you put in a takana or gzeirah temporarily, they will take advantage of that and then extend it or keep it permanently, because that's their view of what should really happen. According to the Rishbam, he says it's simply a melitza ulechazek et davar amarkein. He's saying it just to strengthen the concept of what he's saying. He's saying the halacha is not like this, and anybody who wants to put the halacha in place like this is clearly subscribing to the tzdukim. So he's saying that it doesn't matter what you want to say, it doesn't matter what drasha you come with, we're not going to accept it. He brings other examples of that. For instance, in situations in which we say that even if Eliyahu Navi comes, we won't change the halacha. That's not to mean that we wouldn't change the halacha if Eliyahu Navi tells us differently, but rather to say that we believe so strongly in what we're saying that even if Eliyahu Navi came, we wouldn't change it. So similarly over here, we believe so strongly in this, or against this view of the Tzdukim, that anybody who wants to come and change it, we will reject it outright, because we believe that it is wrong what they are saying. The Rashbam then does bring an alternate pshat as to what the meaning is here and then rejects it, which is that upcoming in the parak we have the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that if someone is a true inheritor of the individual, then he has a right to redistribute or allocate the amount. So for instance, if an individual has three sons, normally they would split the Yerusha one-third, one-third, and one-third. With the exception of the Bechor, would get a double portion. Assuming that there's no Bechor here for whatever reason, they'd split it equally, one-third, one-third, and one-third. What Rabbi Yochanan Baruch says is he can redistribute it. He can give 25% to one, 50% to the other, and then 25% to the last. He can reallocate the percentages as long as he is giving it to someone who is a rightful heir to the Yerusha. So that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's position. So what some people say over here is, even though Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka allows you to redistribute it as long as it's a rightful heir, over here ain't shomim lo. Over here we would not listen to him because of the Maisa Tzdukim. Because this is the view of the Tzdukim, even if Mina Torah, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, you could redistribute and reallocate, we won't let you reallocate between a daughter and a granddaughter. The Rashbam rejects it outright and says that's not the case. Because the way the halacha works is that if you have a daughter and then you have a son, the son takes precedent. The offspring of that son also take precedence. So that means a granddaughter through the son, even if the son's not alive, that granddaughter would take all of the Yerusha. The daughter would be entitled to nothing. So you can't say that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, you're giving it to the rightful heir, you're just redistributing it. Giving it to the granddaughter and the daughter and you're splitting it between them because you can choose. You can't choose in that case. The only rightful heir here is the granddaughter, not the daughter. So yes, amongst the granddaughters, he can redistribute it the way he wants. It doesn't have to be given equally. But to the daughter, he has no right to give it, even according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So for that reason, the Rashbam rejects this view that says that Ein Shomlim Lo means we don't listen to this individual who's following Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka to reallocate the Yerusha in that manner, because there is no reallocation. It's an illegal inheritor in a sense. They are not an inheritor at all, the daughter in that case, and therefore it's not a redistribution, it is a matneh mashakotuv b'Torah. You're changing what the Torah said. And therefore, he says that cannot be the explanation over here. He gives his explanation, which is that if a halachic authority comes along and says this is the halacha, we will reject that halachic authority. No matter how strong halachic authority you are, you cannot overcome this problem, and we will not listen to you with regards to this matter. That's the way the Rashbam learns it. Again, the Baalei Tosafot see it as being a rejection of any temporary injunction to allow this to happen because of the fact that the Tzdukim want this to be the case. The Tanya, because we have a bright, Ba'arba v'esrim v'tevet, on the 24th of Tevet, Tavna l'dinona, Shavnu l'din, we return to adjudicate or to argue this matter, Sheyu Tzdukim omrim, this was the position of the Tzdukim, Tirosha bat imbata ben, the daughter should inherit on a level playing field with the granddaughter. Nitma lehen Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai took them on and went to explain why it's wrong. This seems to be a persistent argument between the Prushim and the Tzdukim. The Tzdukim say that female inheritors are on a level playing field. That means that a granddaughter, who is the daughter of the son, is on an equal playing field with her aunt, the daughter of the deceased. We in Halacha say that's not the case, because since the ben, the son, takes precedence over the daughter, the brother takes precedence over that sister, then the descendants of that individual also will take precedence. That means that the granddaughter in this case would be the sole inheritor, and the aunt or the daughter of the deceased would have no right of inheritance here. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes to show them, Amaleim shutim, minayin zelachem. Where do you have a source for this? What's your source for them? V'lo haya adam shechziru davar. Nobody had an answer. I mean that they all said that that's the halacha, but they didn't have any source for that halacha. Chutz mizaken echad. They had one spokesman, one elderly gentleman, shaya mifatfet kenegdo, that took on or spoke up against him and explained his position. It's zaken stuki that explained it. V'omer. Uma bat bino haba mikoach bino tireshenu bita ba mikocho lo kol shekein. Wait a minute. And this is what we noted numerous times in the Mishnah, that the drush of Chazal makes it that the closest of kin is not necessarily the inheritor. A grandchild will inherit before a child. Meaning that the grandson or granddaughter through a son will take precedence over the daughter. So even though they're further away in terms of blood relationship, they will take precedence. So their Kal v'chomer is exactly that. If you think that the granddaughter inherits, she is only by mikoach kocho. That granddaughter is a second derivative of the deceased. Then the daughter, who is a single derivative, she's one step away from the deceased, kol shekein, certainly she should inherit. And obviously they're applying dayo, lavo min adin, liyot kenidon, so that not that the daughter will then usurp everything and take everything, she'll just be on an equal playing field, or level playing field with the granddaughter. Although, as the Rashbam points out, miu im ben aben moded lo tirot. If it is a grandson, then they would not argue. So it's only a granddaughter where you're already moving to a female inheritor. Over there, they invoke the Kal v'chomer. If you already have a female inheritor, then we should give value to the other possible female inheritors. If it is a male inheritor, then they leave it like that. They agree that males take precedence over females. So they have two principles that are working here. First of all, males will take precedence over females, irrespective of how close they are to the deceased. So that means a grandson would take precedence over a daughter, and they wouldn't question that. But number two is they reject, once you move to a female inheritor, they reject the view of Chazal that it all has to do with where you came from, meaning that the son who produced this granddaughter will take precedence over the daughter directly, whereas the Tzdukim believe that the closest relative when it comes to daughters will take precedence or at least be on equal footing with the granddaughter or any other female inheritor. So that is the Kal v'chomer that they bring. Karla v'etamikra zeh. So he responded to them with these psukim. Eile b'nei Seir achori, yoshvei aretz. These are the children of Seir, yoshvei aretz, those that are the settlers, the inhabitants of the land. Lotan, v'shoval, v'tzivon, v'ana. So here you have these four children, seemingly our brothers, all the sons of Seir. Uchtiv, eile b'nei Tzivon, Ve'aya ve'ana. So now it says over here, these are the children of Tzivon, Aya and Ana. Is Ana the child of Seir? Or is Ana the child of Tzivon? Tzivon is also a child of Seir. In the first pasuk, Tzivon and Ana are brothers. In this pasuk, Ana is the child of Tzivon. So which one is it? El Amalameid, Shabbat Tzivon al Imo. that Sivon consorted with his mother, Volid Anah, and then he gave birth to Anah. So Anah was both his brother as well as his son. So the Gemara says, V'dilma Trey Anah Havu. How do you know that it's one Anah? How do you know it's the same Anah? Maybe Sivon has a brother named Anah and also has a child named Anah. Who says that they are the same individual? Amar Rabba, the others have a Girsa of Rabba. Amina Milta Dlo Amra Shvor Malka. There, I'm going to say over you something that not even Shvor Malka said. Shvor Malka was the Persian king. Over here, you're going to see in the Gemara that it's not a reference directly to the Persian king, but to some halachic figure that has the same power as the king, which is that his memrot are accepted halacha. So the Gemara here says, Umanu Shmuel. That would be Shmuel, because when it comes to machloket, Rav and Shmuel bedinim, the halacha is like Shmuel. So that's what he's saying here. Rabba's or Roba is saying over here, I'm going to tell you something that has the same strength as the Persian king, referencing to Shmuel. If it's a din, the halacha is like Shmuel, so too over here, this is like halacha. Iga damre, amara papa, the Rapapa was the speaker, amina milta dlo amra shvor malka. I will say over something that not even Shmuel Malka said, umanu Rabba. And that references to Rabba, and that's what we just saw before in the Gemara, Rabba Rav Yosef, halacha ke Rabba. Again, that would be the possibility. If you change the Girsa to Rava, it's a little harder to understand, but then you would have to say Abai and Rava, halacha ke Rava, with the exceptions of Yalka Gam. And therefore, in all these cases, the person is just referencing to the king as meaning that I'm going to say something over that they didn't say, but they should have said it. It has the same strength as if they had said it, which is Amar Kra Hu Ana. Because the pasuk says, Ve'elu b'nei Tzivon, Ve'aya v'ana, Hu Ana, Asher Matzati Yamim b'midbar, Biruto et Chamim l'Tzivon Aviv. Chazal darshan from that, that he was a product of a illicit relationship. He was a mamzer. And therefore he created the mules, which are also a crossbreed between animals. So he produced something like himself. But the fact that the Torah says who, Ana, who is an indication that it's the same individual, the same person. So since he's the same Ana, we're connected between the Ana, who's the child of Seir, as well as the child of Tzibon. And therefore, we see here, he is both the grandson of Seir, as well as, quote unquote, the son of Seir. So now what you see is, based on what the Rashbam says, is the puzzle begins. Elu b'nei Seir achuri yoshvei haaretz. First of all, they're all considered to be b'nei Seir, and they're also yoshvei haaretz. They're the ones who inherit the land. So Ana is amongst those parties that is inheriting Seir, or is the yoshvei haaretz. Even though Ana is ben a ben, even though he's a grandson, he's on a level playing field with the sons. So you see here that the grandson is on a level playing field with the sons, and similarly, you would say here that the granddaughter, just like Bnei Banim, grandsons inherit as if they are sons, so two granddaughters inherit as if they are the son, and they would take precedence over the daughter of the deceased. The difficulty with this is that even the Tzukim agree that a grandson takes precedence over the daughter. So Rabbi Yochanan's bringing a proof that's not necessarily something they disagree with. And then he's extrapolating and saying, oh, just like the grandson, so too the granddaughter. That's not necessarily true. The Tzukim differentiate between a grandson and a granddaughter. They would agree with whatever was said here. So therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam comes up with an innovative way to deal with this. And he says that Ana was not a man. Ana was a woman. And he proves it from the pasuk that says, Ve'ela b'nei ahali vama, bat Ana, bat Sivon. It was the daughter of Ana, who is the daughter of Sivon. So Ana is bat Sivon. So you see that Ana is actually a daughter and not a son. Once you do that, then Rabbi Yochanan's proof is beautiful. You now have a granddaughter who is inheriting in line with the other sons. So you see that a granddaughter is considered to be equal to the other sons. And that works out perfectly. The proof of Rabbi Yochanan is exactly what we're looking for. A granddaughter that is equivalent to the son themselves. And that's what you see from these psukim. The difficulty of the Rabbeinu Tam's pshat is, the pasuk says, Hu Ana. He is Ana. So then why would you use the word who if Ana is a female, is a woman? So he says, "Va'adichtiv hu ana b'lashon zachar, ainu mishum shiarsha imachel tzivon kezachar." Because she inherited along with the other brothers, I mean the other sons of Seir, therefore she's considered to be a son, because she is coming into the Yerusha like a son. Now Rashi in Chumash says the way to read that pasuk of Ali Vama Batana Bat Zibon is that once again there was this illicit relationship that went on. Meaning that she is, Ali Vama is the daughter of Ana, but also the daughter of Zibon. Again, Ana slept with Zibon's wife, or his mother, and produced Ali Vama. So again, she's the daughter of both Zibon and Ana because of that illicit relationship similar to the Seir and Zibon that produced Ana. So Ana does similar to what his father Zibon did, which is to sleep with the mother to produce the next generation. And therefore they're Bat Ana and Bat Zibon, but Ana is not the daughter of Zibon. That's how Rashi deals with it on Chumash, bringing the Midrash Chazal with regards to this. But the Rabbeinu Tam is innovative because in that way he's actually giving proof that Rabbi Yochanan needs to bring in order to show that it is a granddaughter is on equal footing with the sons. Now, the Rabbeinu Gershom acknowledges the weakness in Rabbi Yochanan's proof, and he says, Klomar, Shaloye Erotel Akzilem Tshuva, he didn't want to give them a real answer. Elamitoch Divrehem Ratzal Natzcham. Through their own words, he wanted to show that they were wrong. Shem Odim Shemamzer Inu Yoreshet Aviv. Because they believe that a mamzer does not inherit the father, even though he comes from the father's own offspring. So too, daughter, so he says, just like you think that a mamzer does not inherit when they are a direct descendant of the individual, so too the daughter will not inherit when they're a direct descendant. So you agree when there's a granddaughter or a grandson that they will take precedence over a mamzer. So too you should believe that a granddaughter or a grandson should take precedence over the daughter. So he says, even the divrechem, according to Chazal, mamzer is an equal yoresh. So there's nothing to speak about. But according to your own reasoning, you're telling us that closest of kin always goes first or is on equal footing. Then, in the case of a mamzer, why are they not on equal footing with the granddaughter? The answer is, because you think mamzer doesn't inherit. So just like you think a mamzer won't inherit, so too a bat won't inherit. Closest of kin, according to you, is not the final arbiter as to whether you're an inheritor. So that's what the Rabbeinu Gershom suggests, is that Rabbi Yochanan's proof is not literally a proof, rather a hint to them. Just like you think a mamzer doesn't inherit, we think mamzerim do inherit. But you who think that a mamzer doesn't inherit, shouldn't be hard for you to figure out that a bat also should not inherit, because closeness of kin is not always the determining factor. Amalei Rabbi, b'kach ata putrani? So this Zakein says back to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that with that you being a proof? According to the Rashbam, that you brought me a proof from a grandson, not a granddaughter, so that's not a real proof. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, he's going to say, listen, you're talking about a mamzer versus a daughter. A mamzer is zera pasul, and he has no right of inheritance at all. A bat is a zera kasher. She should be able to inherit without a problem. Your comparison's wrong. According to the Reino Tam, where he really brought a proof from the fact that it's a granddaughter, and she's inheriting along with the other sons, nevertheless, he's saying back to them, all you've proven so far is that the granddaughter is on equal footing, but it doesn't prove anything in regards to precedence over the daughters. Because all you see from there is that the granddaughter is on equal footing with the brothers. It doesn't say they take precedence, so you don't have any proof from it. Or you can argue that the reason that Ana is listed under Seir is because B'nei Banim, Ariyem Kibanim. And so you're not going to make something significant out of that. Or basically what they're saying is that this isn't anything to do with Nachalot. You're interpreting what seemingly is this meaningless list that is in the Torah and now giving it significance, which Chazal do in general. Every word in the Torah is important and is significant. But for the Tzdukim, they're just going to say, that's all your interpretation. This is just a list of individuals from Seir, and it has nothing to do with Nachalot, and you can't bring any significance from it. That's all your drush on the Pesukim in the end of Parshat Vayishlach. And therefore, you can't prove anything for me from those Parshiot over there. So he rejects from Yochanan's proof. Amarlo Shoteh, full. Our Torah is not going to be like your simple words. So even though he acknowledges that his proof was not such a strong proof, again, depending on which way you explain it, will determine what type of strength it has with it. According to the Rashbam, he was simply trying to push them away, but didn't want to disclose to them the real reasons because he didn't want them to misuse it or misappropriate it in order to argue with the Prushim. For others, he's arguing fundamentally on their view of this Sicha B'Teila, this idea that there is stam, things that are written in the Torah that don't have significance. But nevertheless, I'll still show you the fact that it's not the case from other parts of the Torah that are dealing with Nachla itself. And that is the hint that he says that our Torah Shlema cannot be like a Sicha B'Teila Shalachem. Our Torah is not going to be like what you consider to be just stam talking in the Torah. But I'll show you that there is proof to what I'm saying from other places as well. But now that you pressed on me, and you said that whatever you said is not true, I'm going to give you the real answer. Ma'alabat b'no, when it comes to the granddaughter, Sheken yafek kocha b'mkom achim, she has strength in the face of the brothers. Tomar b'bito, shora kocha b'mkom achim, but she does not have strength or power in the face of brothers. V'nitzchum, and in that argument, he successfully overcame them. And on that day, they made it into a celebration, a party, to be remembered that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai finally disproved their thesis about the fact that a granddaughter through a son and a daughter should be on a level playing field. Unlike Chazal, who believed that the granddaughter through the son would be the sole inheritor and the daughter would be knocked out. He says, I can show you that because a granddaughter takes precedence over the brothers. For instance, Benot Slavchad. Where in the Torah, the Benot Slavchad are inheritors of the property of Chefer, their grandfather, even though Slavchad had brothers. So you see that the granddaughters, the Benot Slavchad, are on equal footing, at least, with the brothers of the deceased. And therefore, when it came to the death of Chefer, they took an inheritance through their father, Slavchad, on an equal footing with the remainder of Chefer's children. On the other hand, if there was a daughter that was there, she would have no rights in the face of those brothers. If Chefer also had a daughter, and not just sons, the sons would inherit, but not the daughter. So you see that a granddaughter is more powerful than a daughter. The granddaughter who comes as a derivative of Slavchad from Chefer is on equal footing with the remainder of Chefer's children. On the other hand, the daughter of Chefer has no rights in the face of the other children or sons of Chefer, and so you see that the granddaughter has more inheriting power because she comes to a son than the daughter. And in the same way or similar way that Benot Slavchad were equal partners with the other children of Chefer, so too they would be the sole inheritors of Chefer, even at the face of there's only a daughter that was there. So you see that the Bata Ben comes before the Bat because Benot Slavchad took precedence over the daughters of Chefer. Until the end, he brings them a proof from something that's explicit in the Torah, which the Tzdukim themselves can't argue about, because there's no Drashat Chazal anymore. It's explicit in the Torah. Okay, with that, we're going to stop here on four lines down on the top of Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph.